March Madness is here, and things are about to get nuts. So let's get into some Braves talk. As the March to the Arch reaches its final destination, the Braves get ready to do battle for Valley supremacy. Welcome to Braves Talk, everybody. It's the Iceman, Matt Freights, and across from me, the pals, Coach and OG. Welcome, guys.
Iceman, Dad, Braves fans, welcome to Braves Talk. Super excited about this. It is Arch Madness Week, which is one of the funnest weeks of the year for me. The Valley Tournament is one of the best tournaments in the country, certainly on the mid-major level, and I'm really excited and super pumped about our guest today. Dad, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling pretty good. Tired, but
always ready for a show. So as the coach alluded to, we do have a guest. And tonight I'm very, very excited to bring in one half of Bradley's ESPN Plus coverage team. And that is Matt McClain. Matt, welcome to Braves Talk. Thanks for taking out the time, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm a big fan. Can I say I'm the first guest on Braves Talk as well? Is that right?
Yes, you are. You are 100%. And it's going to show in the production of the show as we fumble through this whole episode and try to make this happen. But yes, you are the first guest. And I think I speak for Coach and Rick that we hope it's the first of many.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm super excited.
Well, we are excited to have you. So you come with credentials. Obviously, I mentioned that you are one half of the play-by-play team for Bradley's ESPN Plus crew. But you were actually at the game in enemy territory this past weekend at the loss to Drake. And we don't want to belabor the fact that it's a loss because we really want to talk about Arch Madness. But I would love to hear about your time that you had in Des Moines.
First off, it was an awesome day. Couldn't ask for better weather to travel 4.5 hours each way to Des Moines.
Ooh.
Would have been a lot better if Bradley got the victory. But it was a cool, the Knapp Center, nice venue, 6,000 attendance. And it's kind of like a big, very, very nice high school arena. Like, it doesn't feel like you're stepping into a college atmosphere, kind of. It's like a little bit of a bowl. And anyway, you know, senior day, I thought they would have a sellout. It was like probably about 90, 85% full. Pretty loud. Probably the second best environment we were at this year. My wife and I go to a lot of the games, so we went there with my in-laws as well. And pretty good atmosphere. Second to the Indiana State game, for sure. But, you know, Bradley played pretty well for 34 minutes. You know, there was that four and a half minute stretch at the end of the first half that really killed the Braves. Drake goes on the 17-3 run, I believe, to end the first half. And, you know, kind of the way it's been all season with Bradley is one little lapse in judgment lets a team go on a big run. And that's kind of the difference in the ballgame. You know, it's been five or six of Bradley's losses have been that case. So it's tough to have the last game of the regular season be another learning experience. You would think that and hope that they would have learned that lesson by now. But, you know, hey, if you're going to lose a game at the end of the season, make it be the regular season finale as you go into Arch and don't lose it again now.
Yeah, and Brad and Rick and I talked about how what was there to play for in this game. Now, Rick, you said there was a lot to play for in this game, and so I think that there are takeaways that can be had. So why don't you start us off with some things that you took away from the game?
Yeah, well, if you look at the stats, I looked at it a little bit ago earlier, and if you didn't know what the score was and you look at field goal percentage, at 50% for Bradley, 40% roughly for Drake, 3-point percentage, we beat him by 10 points almost there too. It was like 31-23. You'd have sit there and thought we won by 8 instead of lost by 8 just on those two statistical categories. Then you look at turnovers, 16-8, 25-11 points off those turnovers. Then we go to fouls. Even though the number of fouls was not that drastic, like 4, the free throw attempts and makes, I mean, we were perfect 7-for-7, and they were 96%, 25-26. That was the game. So, and that just tells me we're fouling the shooters while they're shooting. We're not fouling much on the floor, but we're fouling the shooters. And that, to me, tells the story of the game right there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it was the tale of, you know, you could look and kind of tell the story of this game by those two statistical categories, turnovers and then the points at the free throw line. You know, of course, there are other little things we could point to along the way that, you know, Matt, you alluded to some of the lapses in judgment that happen here or there, and it just sort of turns into, you know, those mistakes start to compound themselves, and then you see Draco on a 17-point run. So you can't win games this time of year playing that way, and I have all the confidence in the world that the coaching staff and everyone's working hard to clean those things up. Another bright spot, though, been banging this drum for a couple weeks now, or at least a few games, is Connor Linky, man. I thought he came in and gave some good minutes. Obviously, there's still going to be still some room for improvement there. There's going to be a few instances where, you know, at least you're scratching your head. But you got to remember, this guy hasn't played a lot of minutes. And the time he is giving us, it's been very productive. And it seems to get better and better each time out. So I'm excited to see what he's able to do for the team this weekend at the tournament. And, you know, I thought he did a pretty darn good job on Brody, all things considered. And when it comes down to it, we got to look at, you know, freaking Tucker DeVries is really, really good. And you know, I had text Matt on Sunday during the game, because, you know, me and my dad are sitting there watching it, and he's going off about how lucky he's, like, is there anybody that's luckier than Tucker DeVries? And I'm like, you mean is there anyone who's better? I mean, because he's just really freaking good, and you know, the good ones appear to be lucky more than everyone else. So now overall, it's kind of one that we can, I think, move past. And we knew going into this game there wasn't a ton on the line other than just going out and putting a good performance together, maybe bolstering your resume a little bit for postseason opportunities. But overall, looking forward to next week. And we got old Tony Seghetti in there too. So what's up, Tony? Thanks for hopping in, man.
Hey, Tony, I do have a question for you that you can ponder in the comments while we chat here. But is there a difference between Anthony Seghetti and Tony Seghetti? Are they different personas that you have? Because I was going to call you Anthony there, but definitely loved having you. That's the first time I think he's ever popped up in the show. So, Matt, you are making moves for us. We're left and right over here. We are going to be huge outside of the Powell household very, very shortly here. So, Matt, I have a question for you. So you're at the game, obviously, and you've been calling games now. You've worked in sports media for a while. And when you go as a fan, do you find it hard to shut off your sort of like your media mind? Because you're watching the game as a fan. Obviously, you've been a fan for a long time. And then you're watching the game. And is it hard for you to not... I don't want to say, like, judge the play, but you're looking at it and you're thinking, God, like, as much as I want to be excited here, my brain tells me that this is not going well. Is that hard for you?
100%, yeah. I'm very analytical, and I think probably the people that watch a lot of games with me probably get sick and tired of some of the things that I say. I'm around Coach Wardle a lot, too, so some of the things that he says kind of rubs off on me. So I kind of see things in both of those directions. Even when I worked in TV for 5 years here in Peoria at WMBD as sports anchor, and 2 years previous to that at WEK, like, I was covering Bradley and Illinois State. So part of me was like, hey, I have to be unbiased. I'm a Bradley grad, grew up as a Bradley fan. My dad's been a season ticket holder for like 40 years. You know, part of me has always just kind of had like try to be unbiased, because I don't want to come up on broadcast as, you know, pro Bradley when I'm covering Illinois State, when I was working in TV. So I kind of try to balance all of that and like try to think level-headed as a fan. But let's be honest, as fan is short for fandom, right? So we all kind of have those moments where we get a little bit too amped up. And I'm sure if you guys were watching the game yesterday, you saw us. We actually were a couple rows behind the Bradley bench freaking out most of the game. So we were trying really hard to get the Braves back into it, and probably didn't keep our composure as much as we wanted. But it's tough at times, for sure.
I just think about all of the big-time announcers and broadcasters, how they always get blamed for being a homer for a certain team. So I think you just need to lean into it. You could be the next Joe Buck, for all we know, because he gets blamed for hating everybody now, right? So I think that you should just lean into it, my man. But that's pretty fun. But so the way I look at it, guys, and you can disagree if you want, but this game, it didn't go the way that we wanted. But that's not really why we're here, right? Because starting this week is Arch Madness, and I think that's what we need to focus on. So, Matt, I want to get just your general thoughts on the team heading into the tournament, and not even thinking about matchups or anything, and we're going to dive into that, but just your rapid fire. This is how I feel about the team heading into Arch Madness right now.
This team can win Arch Madness. This team has to have 5 through 8. Be super rock solid for 3 games. We've talked about the consistency, the continuity, Malvi Leons, Darius Hanna, Duke Dean, Connor Hickman, those 4 guys get the team going, right? It seems recently, maybe the last 10 games, it's been the front court that's been clicking in a game, or the back court that's been clicking in a game. Like, it doesn't even have to be like, you know, all 4 of those top 4 having their A games. we can get away with Mal and Darius, you know, dominating down low, or if Duke catches fire, you know, he leads us to a victory. Connor catches fire, he leads us to a victory. Those four guys, you know what you're going to get pretty much every single night. It's been that way all season. Christian Davis, Connor Linky's thrown in that now. You know, you're talking about, you know, these guys coming off the bench, Demarion Birch, and those five through eight, however big the rotation's going to be once it gets down to Arch, those guys have to really, really be locked in. So it's compete, defend, rebound. It's a Brian Wardle team. The defense has been locked in at times here down the stretch. So really kind of try to keep some of that momentum going. Obviously, momentum isn't a tangible thing that you can hold on to. You maybe lose a little bit in a loss at Drake, but hey, that was a close game, closer than the scoreline alluded to, minus that five-minute stretch. So this team can go on down and win. It's really tough to win three games in 3 days, but they're built for it.
What about you, Powells?
Yeah, we've won three before. And I sit there and I think our side of the bracket is going to be so much easier to navigate than that upper bracket. If you look at the teams with Indiana State and who's beat them on that other side of the bracket. But, and I agree. And I also remember Wardle saying, you know, like Sunday's game, our stars, a couple of our stars were not stars. The only guy that really showed up for the most part was Leon's. So we need everybody, one through eight.
Yeah, and Matt, you were kind of, you know, talking about this, alluding to it a little bit, how we don't need all four of those guys to show up and be stars on the same day. I mean, if they were, great, right? If all four of those guys showed up and played to their maximum potential, like, this team could go as far as it wants to go. But I do think it's necessary that at least two of them show up, right? And if we get two of those guys firing on all cylinders and we do have a good supporting cast coming off the bench, we're going to be a tough team to beat, and because we can beat people multiple ways, but we can't, you know, obviously with the way we played Sunday, we can't play through one guy. You know, we got to have a couple of those guys show up and be on their A game. And there's no reason not to believe that this team won't be ready to play and those guys won't kind of answer the bell going into Arch Madness.
Matt, if there are two guys that absolutely have to show up, which are the two that you're picking?
Well, Matt Vailan shows up no matter what. He'll go for like a half of a game, and he'll be a scoreless at halftime, and he'll finish with like 13.7 boards. Mal, I am sure he's going to show up. It's Duke Dean and Connor Hickman. Those two guys can go out and win games for Bradley. It's a guard-driven league. The Valley has been for a long, long, long time. They can get hot at any point, and so their three-point prowess is something that is unmatched in backcourts in the league. Those guys can just really take over games. So it's got to be Hickman and Dean for sure.
And I do have a question as well, because Brad and Coach and I have talked about the idea of momentum, and you said it's intangible. Some people don't believe that it's real, and even within in games. And I'm somebody who believes that those intangibles are actually super important, because they do have an impact on the game, because if somebody gets hot, the whole team feels it. And do you believe in momentum being something that can actually be harnessed, even though it is intangible, it doesn't show up on the stat sheet?
Oh, 100%. You got to have that momentum going. I mean, okay, so it's 27-26. Bradley's leading at Drake, 4:30 to go. They come down, DeVries knocks down a three, get a turnover, get out in transition, you know, 5-0 run, just like that. Bradley's like, hey, we got to stop this. And before you know it, you look up a 17-3 run to end the half. And that's the crowd getting behind you. That's the big thing about Arch, is there's no home court advantage. There are programs that bring a lot of fans and things of that nature, but it's no true home court advantage. I like to think Bradley has the best advantage, because they usually bring a ton of fans. However, that momentum is definitely something that contributed to that victory for Drake. And it is something that, you know, it's not like you can say, hey, this is what won you the game, but it's just that feel of the energy for sure. I think it's something that is truly an asset.
So I have a question, Matt. You know, we talked about momentum and things like this, or like intangible things. Obviously, with your proximity to the bench and the floor when you're broadcasting, and I'm not sure where you sit when you're just there as a fan, but obviously you're fairly close to the program. You know, what sort of things are you maybe aware of? And I don't expect any sort of like deep secrets or anything, but what sort of things maybe are you more aware of than the average fan? These intangible types of things that allow this team to be as successful as they are, that maybe, you know, like I said, the average guy like me wouldn't notice or wouldn't even be aware of unless I was a little more plugged in.
You hear a lot about the family culture around the Bradley program, and it is true. So you're at a game at Carver Arena, there's times where it maybe gets a little quiet. if you sit in anywhere in the lower bowl, you can hear Coach Wardle coaching, like the respect that he demands from his players. And, you know, you buy into that program, you're coming in, you understand you're going to get coached tough. That's one of the things that Coach Wardle always says about when he tries to get European players, is how coachable they are. And they come over and they understand I have to work hard. You can get in their face. Sometimes that's what you have to do. The thing that I would say that maybe I'm more privy to, or I see more, is just how much, you know, everybody in the program cares for one another. It's like a cliche, it's your family or whatever. But if guys are in the Bradley program right now, it's because they care for one another. They believe in Coach Wardle and everything he's done. You look at the blueprint he's laid in this 8+ years now in his 9th year. And really that consistent excellency that they have had in building up this program, it really is a family affair. And it shows by the assistant coaches that have stayed with them. You know, Coach Bargan and Coach Foster have been here for those years too. So it's just really cool to see all those guys kind of work together in that fashion.
No, and that's great you said that, because I think that sometimes from a distance as a fan, you know, you start to see different, you know, narratives that get spun up about, you know, people's perception of maybe the relationships within the program. And I've, as a former, you know, coach for a long time, multiple sports, and like, I've always, you know, dealt with angry parents and people that think they know what's going on. But I've always said, like, I err on the side of like trusting coaches, right? And trusting that there's a lot of things that me as a fan that just sees 40 minutes twice a week have no idea about, like that these, there's a lot of thought and rationale that goes into these decisions, and whether it's substitution patterns or lineups or the way that the players are handled in different situations. Like, I believe it's all very well calculated. And I don't think for a second that you would pull a player to the side and that they would, and express your crazy fan opinion that they would agree with you. I think they would be like, no, like this is what happened. Like, I was wrong, or I was supposed to, you know, I think from what I gather, you know, coach seems to be a pretty straight shooter. And I think those guys respect that. I mean, I respect that just as a person, and I always tried to coach that way. And I think that maybe we don't always know the full story. And so I think that's important to remember as fans.
Coach Wardle coaches with his emotions on his sleeve. And if you go to a game and you have any questions about whether he is interested or not, you won't have it, because you can tell how committed he is and how passionate he is about it. So I would much prefer that than the opposite end of the spectrum, somebody who doesn't care at all, which
I recall when he was, you know, playing in high school football. I remember one time he got me on the phone and, you know, was saying dad, he was, didn't have very good practice, that coach was yelling at him, you know, kind of a biggest part of the time at practice and that. And my lesson to him at that time was, don't listen to the yell, listen to the words the coach is speaking in that yell, and that will take you where you need to go. And I think those were pretty good words to you at that time, wasn't it?
I don't remember.
I also, some of the words that the coach said probably aren't appropriate for this family program that we have going on here. So we, maybe some things better left unsaid, if that's it. But guys, so Bradley's not playing, I think, until Friday. So Rick, you are the expert here. You have taken victory laps in the comments that not one person has said anything about to this point. So why don't you continue the victory laps, and why don't you break down the first round of Arch Madness for us?
Yeah, of course no one's going to slam a winner. But yeah, I mean, I lost one game of my picks, which actually was fairly easy, you know. I mean, but it had to be the Birds to lose the game. But the one game that I got a little pushback on was the Southern Illinois, Northern Iowa game, which I picked Northern Iowa to win. And as it ends up, as I predicted, every seed in the tournament was exactly what I said it would be.
Rick Stradamus here, folks. If he'll be taking bets next year as we get our own show FanDuel account, we could place some bets on these games.
There you go.
So
I was going to bring you an award. It's true. For your picks.
He was.
I was going to bring you some donuts because I felt like they were very representative of your takes and opinions, because they are somewhat solid, but mostly soft and with a big hole in the middle. And I thought that was pretty indicative of some of your takes.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
they don't call him the prognosticator for nothing, folks. So why don't we actually get to what we're here to talk about? And let's talk about the first round, Rick, because I know that you have scattered all these games. So give us a little bit of breakdown of the three games we can look forward to in the first round.
Four games.
Whatever. You got it.
Well, let's go. Missouri State and Murray State. The two M states. Throw up a coin. Figure out which one's on that one. I would probably lean more to Murray State. Because I just think Missouri State is a little not organized yet or still. And so I think Murray State probably pull that one off. Valparaiso, Belmont. To me, it's easy. Belmont will take that one again. Illinois State, Evansville. The way Illinois State has played lately, or last game, I'll go Evansville on that one. And then UIC, Southern. That's toss-up also. The way Southern's played. I think UIC has been coming on. I almost want to go UIC, but I think you got to go with Johnson and the defense. Go Southern on that game.
Yeah, I think those we're gonna have some intriguing matchups in the first round. I think, and a lot of it comes down to, like you said, how you're playing right now. And I think you look at Belmont. Like, Belmont's playing their best basketball right now. Like, that's a team that I wouldn't necessarily want to play. And I'm happy they're on the other side of the bracket at this point in time. You know, talking about the matchup that leads into the Braves, UIC and SIU, you know, you may naturally say, well, of course, I'd rather play UIC. Like, they're 11, the 11 seed. You know, we've got two W's against them this year. But that's a team that's playing pretty well right now that has nothing to lose at all. And they're going to be playing loose and go out there and just let it rip. And I think I would rather play. I think Southern's going to be a little tighter. And I think with Southern, like, you know what you're going to get. Truthfully, I feel better about the team that maybe we match up better against and that we know more about in SIU than I would about a on-fire, like I said, carefree, nothing to lose UIC in that situation. You know, that always you get those underdogs or those lower-level teams, and they get a little hope or momentum like we talked about. And I think they could be dangerous, and I would just prefer to avoid that situation in general. And I mean, let's be honest, it doesn't matter who comes out of that game. If we're who we think we are, we should take care of business. And, you know, Matt, I'm curious kind of what your perspective is, because you've, you know, called games with these teams, so you're maybe a little more knowledgeable about the ins and outs.
Yeah. You know, I don't think Bradley has a preference on who they play. They're just going to take whoever they come with. I know today in the weekly teleconference, Coach Wardle's like, hey, we're just going to do prep on the two games we played against UIC, the two games against Southern. You know, I looked back at the games, you know, the two wins that Bradley had over UIC, Dean and Hickman controlled the game in Chicago, and then it was Hannah and Leon's controlling the game in Peoria. It's kind of one of those pick your poison moments. So they found ways to win against UIC both times. Obviously, Coach, as you mentioned, UIC has been playing really good basketball as of late. You know, they just took Drake to triple overtime up in Chicago. So, you know, they're playing with kind of, let's just go out there and play. We don't have anything to lose right now. And then Southern, they might be down a little bit since they got bounced from that four seed. So they might be a little bit hesitant, you know. But, hey, they got to go and win four games in 4 days. It's going to be extremely tough. And the games against Southern, obviously, Bradley had that huge come-from-behind victory, 23 points, the most in program history, down in Carbondale. It's a game that I think most Bradley fans will remember for a long time. I know I will. That was a crazy game. And then they just destroyed Southern, you know, the other night at Carver. So kind of two game plans that were extremely different between the games that Bradley played in Carbondale versus in Peoria. So, look, they have tape on both of these teams, ways that they can beat them. If I was saying who I would prefer to play, I honestly think I would prefer to play UIC. And that just goes to say, like, hey, Xavier Johnson is one of the top scorers in the league for the Salukis for a reason. Bradley has played against him very, very effectively in this two games, 13.5 points per game he's averaging against the Braves. And, you know, he's one of the top scorers in the country for a reason, you know, in that 23, 24 points per game mark. Bradley's held him to under 14 on average in the two games that they played. So, you know, Bradley's got the reigning defensive player of the year and Leon's, some other really, really great guards up defensively as well, too. But Johnson is such a unique player that he's one of those guys who could pretty much win you a game single-handedly. It doesn't have to be with points. It can be running the offense. So I think I would take my chance with UIC if I was going to pick. I think Bradley can handle both of these squads, though.
No, I think you're right. You know, if we want to do what we're going to do, we got to take care of business. And this is a great question here. How much stock do you guys put into saying it's hard to beat a team three times? And Tony, thanks for that question. And, you know, I'll defer. You know, Dad, I don't know if you want to take a crack at that one first. What you think of that saying that gets bounced around a lot this time of year?
Yeah, for all the time I've been following Bradley, that kind of has been a solid case. You know, not always, but yeah, there is some truth that it's hard to beat a team three times. I mean, look at us against Indiana State. The two times, you know, they beat us. We played Drake close in both games. The ending, you know, final score doesn't necessarily show it, but we showed reasons why. And we just cleaned some things up. And, you know, the Drake game Sunday, we win it by 8-10 points or more. But yeah, it is going to be hard. And it's a do or die situation in St. Louis.
No, you're right. Matt, I'm curious about your thoughts on that as well.
It's a cliche, but it's something that pretty holds true. You look at some of the teams that the situations in the past at previous Arch Madnesses, and you throw everything out the window. And when you've already played a team twice, like pretty much every team has in the Valley, obviously there's two teams in the league. You only play one at home and one on the road. So there's a few unique situations where that wouldn't be the case. But I think when you have beaten a team twice, let's strike that, reverse it. If you've lost to a team twice, you are way more motivated. And it's not really the same situation because last year Drake and Bradley split in the regular season. But just to kind of use it as a little bit of a microcosm, the championship game, the end of the regular season last year between Drake at Bradley. And, you know, Drake loses that game. Then they go into Arch. The two teams play each other again on Sunday. And Drake has way, way, way more motivation. So just using that, hey, the question that Tony asked, how much stock do you guys put into saying it's hard to beat a team three times? It's hard to beat a team two out of three times, let alone three out of three. So even more motivated if you have been the team that's lost twice to a squad already and you get that third chance.
No, I agree. And I think about, I kind of go back to my coaching days. I was coaching wrestling and junior high, middle school wrestling. And we had a kid that he was undefeated all year long. And there was a kid from another school. These guys probably wrestled six times throughout the season. And it kept getting closer and closer and closer every time. And we were in the same regional as them, in the same sectional as them. And like the regional match went to overtime. And our guy had won all of them up to this point. Well, sectionals, we lose. Our guy loses to their guy. And he's super bummed. I'm like, listen, like this had to happen. And our guy went on to actually wrestle the same kid in the state championship next weekend and beat him. And I'm like, if you hadn't lost to him last week, you would have lost to him this time, you know? And like, you had to like finally have that experience of like accepting that like this guy's good enough to beat you. And so you went out in the state championship instead of wrestling not to lose, you went out and wrestled to win because now you knew you had to wrestle good enough to win. And I look at it like that a little bit. I think once you kind of like last year with what Bradley did to Drake in the last game of the regular season, it's like Drake had to have that moment of, okay, like if we aren't at our best, this team can get us. And so, you know, we've got to be ready to go. And then we saw the effort that they put out in the championship game on Sunday last year. And there's a number of things that played into that game. But I do think that it's probably more so kind of that mental acceptance of, okay, like if you do get beat by a team during the regular season, that you maybe take them more seriously, like in even a subconscious kind of way. And it looks like maybe the Iceman is back in business.
See, this is what I get for having actual equipment up here. I should just do it on my phone the way that everybody else does it and gets big. So my apologies, gentlemen. I have been keeping up with what's been going on, and I think you guys are talking up a good time here. Not that I could really add to this, because I think you guys are locked in on this, and you guys are asking all the questions and apparently stealing all of Tony's big points that he was going to be talking about. So apparently we're doing something right here. But I do have to ask all of you, if there is a best case scenario for Bradley, what would it be for them to win the Arch outside of the stuff we talked about already? But are there certain teams outside of, let's say, Drake and Indiana State obviously need to lose, but is there like a happy path for them?
Yeah, I got it.
Go.
You beat Southern, you beat Drake, you beat Indiana State.
You want them all.
You punch your ticket to the big dance. That's me.
All right.
I want to beat those teams.
Do you want to beat them? All right.
I know they do as well. So.
And what is it that Ric Flair used to say? You want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
No, 100%. Right. And yeah, I think that you absolutely, not that, who cares, right? You punch your ticket, you're there, but still you don't want to have that, maybe that narrative out there. Well, you know, it's, you know, Indiana State got knocked off by Murray and then, you know, Valpo upset. But I mean, you don't want there to be some narrative that you had an easy way Not that that matters in the end because you're going regardless, but I agree. Like, it would feel really nice to go through those three teams on the road to the tournament, because that would just remove all doubt that that you are the best team, at least you were that weekend, and that you belong in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, don't you want to get revenge for last year too? The way that the season ended in the final of Arch Madness? Like, don't you want to give the receipt back? I would.
Yeah, I don't know. Last year was last year. I mean, we got this year. Let's take it one game at a time. Friday night, start it.
I need some revenge. I need revenge. I need there to be pettiness. Well, so in
yes, we want. Yes, hey, we want to take that receipt.
Revenge.
Thank you.
The best revenge this year will be to take care of Drake on Saturday in Indiana State on Sunday. That'll be the best
Very
revenge.
Very diplomatic. Very diplomatic of you, OG.
Yeah.
So, Matt, I think you told me offline that you're going to be at Arch Madness as a fan, right? So what are some of the things you will be partaking in on a Bradley perspective while you're in St. Louis?
Well, you got to go to Ballpark Village. Enjoy that. just going to all the games. We'll be at all the sessions. So just going and enjoying it, talking to people, talking to folks that you see from other programs, and just really enjoying it. Arch Madness is a special place. I know it's kind of a cliche, but St. Louis is a basketball haven. There's a ton of people who go who are neutral just to go and hang out that don't even support one of the Valley teams. And so it's just a great party, great coming together, and it really helps when you win. And Bradley's been in three championship games in the last 5 years, so they definitely have the squad that can do it again. It's just whether or not, and we haven't seen it too often this year. You know, we kind of just alluded to it, but Bradley hasn't played many perfect games. And there's no such thing as a perfect game. But just playing 40 minutes of defense, no turnover, like limiting the turnovers, and this team is going to have an amazing chance, an opportunity to win three games and punch their tickets. So just being a fan, going down and enjoying the atmosphere down at Enterprise Center, it's a great basketball venue.
No, absolutely it is. And I'm hoping that maybe got some family conflicts that keep us from going down for all sessions, but hoping that, you know, possibly we can get down, Dad and I can get down maybe Saturday night for the semifinal, and hopefully Sunday for the championship would be awesome. So if we do, we'll try to definitely, we'll make a stop at Ballpark Village for sure, have a couple cold beverages and enjoy the weekend. But I tell you what, I'm really excited to, I'm going to have to watch on TV, but see how hyped the Bradley crowd is at 8:30 on Friday night. Mostly a well-lubricated Braves Nation in the Enterprise Center.
There's some vodka Red Bulls or something, right? I don't know. Is that family-friendly for this?
Man, that brings back some college memories, let me tell you, and not necessarily good college memories, easy, as my camera goes out again. Plus, college was like 20 years ago for me, so some of those memories are fading for other reasons. But I am looking forward to watching my very first Arch Madness and watching it from the perspective of somebody who has become almost in love with this fan base and this team over the last month. I mean, we've only been doing this podcast now a month, and so far a lot has happened, and I know personally, even though I went to Virginia Tech and I'll always love my Hokies, this has become sort of like a second home for me. So I'm very, very excited to watch Arch Madness and see how things go, and to text with Brad about all of the ridiculous things that his dad is saying sitting next to him in the chair or at the arena. Matt, you are on here.
I got one thing to say.
Of course. Go ahead.
I have to go back to it because my comment yesterday was about DeVries, you got to keep in mind, this was right after he took a shot. Now, I don't have a problem, because I got to stop there. I don't have a problem someone squared up to the basket, you know, defenders coming at him, but he had a defender on him. He turns his body not even three quarters, wasn't even squared up, and just heaves it, and it's nothing but net. There's luck in them shots like that. I don't care who you are, but I see that all the time. So, but I always say, man, some people are just so lucky. Maybe it's because I can't hit them.
And
well, I told him, I go, we watched Anthony Parker make a lot of threes like that coming around screens back in the day, that you know, turning his body in the air and putting them in. I said, I guess he must have been really lucky too.
Hersey Hawkins, I think, was probably even better than Anthony Parker in that.
You know what those three guys, all have in common? Like, they're studs, and they are all in offense, kind of pro style offenses, where they're so good that the one player operates the entire offense for the whole team. Like DeVries is coming off of screens, and when you're with Leons or Hickman coming behind and they have a backdoor cut off of it too. Like they run the same sets, but there's like 10 different things that they can do off it depending on defense. And no matter what, how you guard it, they're going to have an open shot. And guess what? If they don't have an open shot, they're going to give it to DeVries. He's going to make a 25-foot fadeaway. You're like, well, hat tip. What can you do?
Yeah. What's the old saying? Better to be lucky than good, folks. So, Matt, you are on here, obviously, as a Bradley fan, but I know that you're very passionate about some other things. So I wanted to give you the floor, being our first guest, to be able to speak to some of these things and go as deep as you'd like. So the floor is yours to talk about some of the things that you're passionate about other than Bradley basketball.
Oh, we're going to get philosophical.
Sure. The OG does it all the time.
I don't know, man. I wasn't prepared for that one.
All right.
I love spending time with family and friends. I love playing poker. I love Pokemon. I'm like a 90s kid at heart, so Pokemon's my thing. And, you know, we travel a lot. We like to go to Disney. We're big Disney people. So my wife, Jamie, and I know Jamie's watching. She told me not to shout her out, but I have to. We love traveling around. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You know, I worked in a industry that – oh, there she is. That's her comment. She loves Arch. I worked in an industry previously to my job. Now I work in healthcare. That 7 years working in television, that's what I went to school for, is sports communications. And it was just very grueling. And so, you know, a lot of hours, a lot of weekends, a lot of nights. And honestly, the last 2 years where I've worked for my healthcare job has just been really eye-opening to how most of the world operates, enjoying weekends and having free time. So I've really just been enjoying that and leaning into a little bit more of the fandom side of my Bradley basketball joy.
Absolutely nothing wrong with that, right, guys? So listen, man, it's been fun having you on here. But before we get out of here, Coach OG, do you have anything else that you'd like to either ask Matt or provide to our lovely audience tonight?
Well, glad for everybody to come out. So many of the good questions, comments. Great for you to be here, Matt. Hope we can get together soon, maybe next week, talk about that deal with the Valley, and I'll go from there.
Nope, couldn't said it better. Thank you everybody again for the support, and it really does mean a lot, and it's a lot of fun getting to share the joy in this program with all of you, and hopefully we get to continue it here for the next couple of weeks. Looking forward to that and all the excitement that comes with it, and really pumped about Arch Madness this weekend, and excited to see the team go out there and lay it all on the line. And there's nothing like March when it comes to college basketball, and Arch Madness does it better than anybody. And Matt, of course, to echo everyone else's sentiments, thank you very much for joining us. This was great, and do hope you could definitely come back in the future.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to anytime. I do have one more thing, Matt. I see you're about to wrap up. Can I go with one more thing
The
here?
Floor is yours.
I thought it was super, super analytical. I had one more stat that I kind of want to talk about here real quick.
Okay.
So, OG, you were talking about free throws, and Matty Ice, you had mentioned, hey, you asked me, what's like one thing Bradley has to do really well? Free throws. I took a little bit of a dive into this. This is kind of what I do for my prep for games, so I don't have a game to broadcast, so I want to throw this out there. Bradley's first 13 games of the season, they had shot 67% from the free throw line, and free throws attempted per game was just under 18, so... Obviously, 67% from the free throw line, not very good. Getting to the free throw line 18 times is not terrible. So that was the first 13 games of the season. That goes all the way up to the last game in 2023. Turn the calendar to 2024. We played 18 games in 2024. The free throw percentage has gone up 11%. So we're up to 78% in those 18 games Bradley is. That's the 96th percentile among Division I teams. That's excellent. You look at free throws attempted per game, it's down to 14. So we're shooting four less free throws per game. So what that's telling me, that there's been a little bit of debauchery with some of the discrepancies in fouls. I'm not going to say anything about referees or things of that nature. What it does tell me is perhaps Bradley is becoming a bit more tentative on the offensive end and not being as aggressive. They are a three-point shooting team. They got to get the ball inside. They got to try to drive the seams, kick out, get that going. But like the more you drive, the more you're able to do that, be aggressive, get to the free throw line. Like the Achilles heel the first quarter half of the season was, hey, like these guys can't make free throws right now, what's going on? Like, but it's been extremely good since then, like since the NBC Valley play kind of restart after the two games that you play, and then you finish your non-con. But just in 2024, the last 18 games, 78% from the free throw line is amazing. But they just got to get to the line more. So that is a huge key for these three games that they're going to play coming up this weekend. Get to the free throw line, be aggressive, don't foul.
No, that's excellent. I'm super pumped you shared that, man. Those are some great stats that are very eye-opening in the big picture. So thank you for sharing that.
I mean,
I had to get it off my chest because it's been burning a hole all day. And I'm like, all right. And then, Rick, you said stuff about the free throws. I was like, I should have said it then. So
so often in March, games are won and lost at the free throw line. If there's something that drives me more nuts than anything in sports, it is missed free throws late in a game. So I love that stat. As a statistician, I can't be happier to hear percentiles, and it gets me all jazzed up. So I'm very, very excited. But Matt, it's been a pleasure having you. For everybody who is on here, this is easily the biggest audience we've ever had. I'm not going to regale you with all the social media stuff, because if you are here, you already know how to find us, and you have been supporting us. So from me, the OG, from Coach, and from Matt too, I want to thank everybody. I'm looking forward to Arch Madness, but we will see you hopefully before Bradley's game against whoever it is going to be in Arch Madness. So I hope everybody is well and safe, and we'll see you next time. This is Braves Talk. Opinions and viewpoints expressed on INC Sports are those of Matt Freights, Brad Powell, and their guests, and not necessarily those of the Matty Ice Media Network. INC Sports is exclusively owned by Matt Freights and Brad Powell and is brought to you by the Matty Ice Media Network.